And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz. This is episode 34. And I'll tell you something. This is not only episode 34, and that's a great thing for us, but this is really an amazing time for podcasting. With this episode, what you're going to be hearing is the addition of the Disciplined Investor on the Microsoft Network. Why is that important? You know, we've seen a lot of smaller podcast directories out there that have been giving a great amount of play and a great amount of exposure to podcasts like us. iTunes, we're one of the top rated on iTunes right now. And hopefully that is because we're doing a great job of giving you a great amount of advice. But what happens now is we're really stepping it up. Microsoft has now entered into the business of podcasting, and on the Microsoft Zune Marketplace, we are now a featured podcast. And what's great about that is we're seeing the podcasting world becoming much more mainstream. It was only, I don't know, about a year ago, year and a half ago, that this whole thing really took off, and that was with the help of Apple and iTunes, really focusing in on some of the important distribution for podcasting. Well, I'm glad to say here we are. We're strong. We have an amazing subscriber base, and thank you for joining us, and thank you for the Zune Marketplace for putting us on the feature list, and I hope that you subscribing on your Zunes today are going to find a tremendous amount of profit from the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We have lots to talk about today. Lots and lots to talk about today. We have two great interviews. We have one with a gentleman named Sean Aiken, who is the creator of OneWeekJob.com. OneWeekJob.com. I'll tell you what that is. I met this guy after I was channel surfing in Boston. I was at a conference in Boston, and I was channel surfing, and I saw a great
the
little
Disciplined Investor is
segment
all about you,
from CNN
your money,
that was focusing on a gentleman who was looking
and
searching
for
what he wanted to be when he grew
up. Investor Podcast.
It could have been me. It could have been you. I mean, you know, who knows what we want to be these days and if it's our final destination, what we have now. But he was looking by doing something unique. He was going around the country and getting a new job, one job per week. And what he would do is he would go and be a baker. He would work in a place, maybe doing finance like what he did with me for 1 week at a time. OneWeekJob.com. We're going to have an interview with Sean Aiken and see what he did here as a stock trader at Horowitz & Company. And we have a great interview with a gentleman who you really need to listen to, Jim Juback, who is a senior markets writer for Microsoft. He is an amazing, amazing financial guru. Really, my hat is off to Jim because Jim has been consistently finding stocks to invest in that outperform the S&P 500 by a wide margin. And I'm going to find out how he does it and how he uses the tools that he does, where he finds his information, when he buys, when he sells, and we're going to get into a deep interview with him very shortly. And then we're going to talk about some of the issues in the market, maybe some of the things you should be doing, staying away from, give you some good profit-making tips. Now, for those of you that are joining me for the first time here, you know what? I always tell you the same thing. You need to be getting out a pen and a paper because a lot of things we're going to talk about throughout this, a lot of stocks, mutual funds, maybe some bonds, preferred stocks, and all sorts of investment ideas. So you need to make sure that you're ready to go because we move fast. We move at the speed of sound, maybe even sometimes the speed of light. But nonetheless, if you're joining me for the first time, I want you to make sure that you are ready. You are ready with pen and paper in hand. You are thinking and sitting back, relaxing. If you're in a car, pay attention, but get ready to make sure to make some mental notes. Don't drive and write at the same time. That doesn't usually happen to be a good combination. And you're going to have to get ready because the Disciplined Investor, episode 34, starts right now.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Let's go quickly into a few things before we get into our interviews today. Number one, I want to talk to you about this whole idea that right now we are in a real firestorm. We're really at the back end of the hurricane, as we talked about some time ago. I had a conversation with a good friend of mine from thestreet.com. His name is Aaron Task, and we talked about the whole idea of this whole storm analogy where, you know, we were in the eye of the hurricane for some time in July and August where things started to calm down, and maybe right now, maybe we were sucker punched. I mean, it looks like that right now we're looking at these markets being really worse off than they were when it was looking good in August. Don't be fooled. Right now, what you want to do is stay on the sidelines with some money. Look for bargains. Find those stocks that got beaten down. We talked about something like Crocs last week, still down, I mean, ridiculous amounts of money. Look at a company like Baidu. I mean, just got cremated the last few weeks. Apple is seeing about a $30 or $40 move down from its, about $32 from its high. And right now, I want you to consider being safe. Stay on the sidelines for a little longer. Don't get caught up in all the hysteria. The markets are moving down for a reason. Simply, we have a bad economy. We can leave it right there. We have oil that is approaching $100 a barrel. We have a historically low dollar. I've talked about this ad nauseum to you over and over again. Now is not the time to get involved in these markets. If you want anything, if you have to have something, if you're saying, what can I put my money in right now? I got to tell you something. I've talked about it months ago. I'll tell you about it again. Preferred stocks. Preferred stocks are those positions that you want to look at that have a not such a great correlation to the current markets, but what they do have is great interest payments. And because the ratings agencies have done such a terrible number on many of these stocks, what we're finding is that these stocks really have some benefit right now. So what I want you to do is I want you to look at some of these preferreds. If you want a list of it, just feel free to give me a quick note at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And I'll try to put a couple of the preferreds that I like right now up on the site for you to take a look at. The final thing I want to talk about the markets is this, that you're going to see a continuation of some of the slide for a little while longer because we are entering into a very precarious time when it comes to the market. Why is that? Think about it for a second. Right now, we are in November. We're going to be starting to get into the tax selling season. People know this. There's a lot of profits that were made on short-term and long-term positions at the third quarter, second and third quarter into this year. People are going to start taking profits. Be aware of this from two angles. Number one, if you're looking to take profits, maybe now's the time. Secondly, if you're thinking about buying into things that may be very beneficial because they're beaten down for no good reason, now may be the time. I think that you need to be very, very cognizant of what's happening. And as I said in my last podcast, the Dogs of the Dow are one of the best places to be right now. Take a look at the Dogs of the Dow, the top 10 yielding stocks of the Dow Jones Industrials. Maybe there's some benefit for you right now. I think there is really, a lot of them have been beaten down to a point that is just, again, ridiculous. Think about it. Pretty good place to be right now. Other than that, stay on the sidelines. And finally, if you're feeling at all, well, a little bit nervous about these markets, you don't know what to do, you don't know where to go, you don't know where to get your advice, well, hopefully here I'm doing my best to give you a little bit of good advice. And right now my advice again is to stay away from the markets entirely. But what I want you to do is think about, number one, you've been great buying my book, The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, that by the time you hear this is going to be becoming live on Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com and all various places around the country. But the good news is I've been asked by many people to put together an audiobook, and that is ready to be downloaded. It's $24.95. It's about 6 hours of the core disciplines of investing. You can download it at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, $24.95. And from now through, because it is the beginning of this, we're going to give you a 10% discount for anybody that wants to pick that up. You can download that, or there's also the CDs that are available in MP3 format. So if you want the audiobook of thedisciplinedinvestor.com, there's a quick 10% off for anybody that's listening to this podcast. Take down this code. And the code is TDICAST, TDICAST, C-A-S-T. Just put that in the code, the coupon, and you get a quick 10% off for that. And also, if you bundle it up, if you buy the book and the audiobook, if you want to do so, we're going to give you a 10% off across the board for both. So again, just use that same code and should get you that 10% off. All right, with that in mind, let's skip on over, take a quick break, hear from the people that are supporting this podcast, and listen in to the next interview that's coming up. We'll give a call to Jim Juback, MSN Money Central. You're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Did you know that bulls sometimes like the naked option? Bears sometimes buy butterflies. And diamonds are some trader's best friend. And there's nothing so satisfying as when we see our shorts come down. Unless, of course, everyone else has longs and are quickly covering their shorts. Did you ever see hammers with long bodies and short shadows after a shooting star appeared just prior to a dark cloud cover? There have been numerous sightings lately of long collars used upside down, head and shoulders.
sound like gibberish? Well, they're not. These are all real investment terms that you need to know. Learn the lingo and techniques of pro traders before you invest, and you too may even own spiders or even a new convertible. The Disciplined Investor, the groundbreaking book that gives you professional investment tools page after page. The Disciplined Investor. Get your copy and profit from it. Written by Andrew Horowitz.
Do you have an idea for a show? Comments and suggestions are always welcome. Write in to info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com.
In 3, 2, 1. And now back to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Have Jim Juback, who is the senior editor at MSN Money, and he's written books and just a great guy. If you ever looked at his portfolio, you'll be amazed at how well he really knows his stuff on this market in terms of just really time and time again outperform the S&P by a wide benchmark. So thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Andrew.
All right, so let's talk about the recent article that you wrote, and then we're going to talk about some sell disciplines that you and I discussed.
you mean the one where I called Ben Bernanke a wuss?
yeah, that was bold. Did he call you and ask for an apology yet?
No, he's
busy.
Not calling me or emailing me or anything else. I think he's used to the abuse,
I suppose. But what is the story with the Fed in terms of? Do you really believe that the Fed, in general, it's not just Bernanke, of course, it's the whole Fed concept of what they're doing. Just throwing in the towel and allowing, I look at it like heroin junkies. Just give them a little bit more, or kids with candy. Just give them more. They'll be quiet. Kind of just to appease them.
You remember the last Fed chairman, Alan, what was his name? Greenspan.
Blue,
and, you know, basically the market felt that they had something that called, you know, it had a formal name. It was the Greenspan put.
Right.
The idea is that if the market got into trouble, Greenspan would bail them out. He was their insurance policy. And I think, you know, Bernanke has essentially followed in those footsteps, and the market has basically concluded that, hey, what we've done is we've traded the Greenspan put for the Bernanke put, and if we get into trouble, he's going to bail us out. What's extraordinary is that we had this, you know, the Fed cut its short-term interest rates by 50 basis points, half a percentage point in August, and then without letting that work through the system in any way, they then cut again at the end of October. And you look at it and you go, well, gee, you know, why? You don't really have any data that tells you whether the 50 basis points was enough. Mm-hmm. You just had a GDP number that came in stronger than anybody thought. Mm-hmm. And the real problem is that, you know, whether it's true or not, it looked like the Fed had been stampeded into action because the market had basically priced in 100% probability of getting a 25 basis point rate cut. The only bet was whether it be 25 or 50. So basically it looked like, you know, if the market panics enough, the Fed will do it.
Yeah. Big Daddy's going to come and rescue him. You know, what about this? Just as an oddball theory, you know, it seems to me that I agree with you that when the Fed reduces rates, it takes some time to trickle down through the economy to really hit the pocketbooks and the wallets of the average Joe out there. What is the story, in your opinion, with the dislocation of gas prices and oil per barrel? I mean, we're still at the same general price range on gas at the pump that mm-hmm. we are at the, you know, that we were several months ago, but now we're $25 or $30 higher per barrel.
Yeah, but I think you need to look at these really as two separate markets, because what's going on right now, and I my guess is that we're talking about the last $10, $15, $20 worth of increase in the price of a barrel of oil. You know, you get commodity markets that launch themselves into this self-perpetuating price climb. And what you've got in the oil market right now is you've got a lot of people really scared that we're going to, you know, when we were $80, they were scared of $100. Now they're scared of, we've got people hedging $250 a barrel of oil at this point. Panic.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, when you hedge, somebody has to take the other end of that deal. I mean, it's an insurance contract, so somebody's insuring you against higher oil prices, and now they're then exposed to higher oil prices. Mm-hmm. And the way they go about lessening their risk is they actually go out and buy oil. So every time somebody insures against higher oil prices, you actually get a purchase of oil, which drives oil prices higher.
It's like a short squeeze.
So right now, what you've got in oil, and this is not gasoline, because this is not going in gas, because that's not, you know, I you know, I don't own a car, but if I did, I couldn't go out and hedge gas prices. It's something I can't do. But if you're Southwest Airlines, you can do it for jet fuel, or if you, you know, run a factory and you care about oil. So it's not happening in the oil market, in the gasoline market, but it is happening in the oil market. And I think that's one of the reasons you got this big divergence. You're starting to see a little bit of tick up in gas prices because of demand. But again, you don't have this extreme forward-looking, you know, hedging risk that's driving up the price of oil for the last $10, $15, $20 or so.
Right, exactly. All right, let's get into one more thing about what you have spoken about in one of your recent articles, and this whole issue about, I think I saw it in a video that you did too for MSN, and this whole idea that the rating companies are really forcing a lot of problems in this market because they were wrong on their ratings or their originally, and maybe they're wrong on the ratings or right now, but they're causing a lot of people to dump some prime fixed income, and it's causing a lot of problems. And my biggest concern then is, what does that mean for preferred stocks?
Preferred, I'm not so much worried about. I mean, but one of the things that goes on, and we saw this in August. I mean, we had this really, you know, perverse effect that when people's portfolios got into, you know, people's risky debt portfolios got in trouble, they didn't sell the risky debt. Because, hey, you don't want to sell something that's at a 30% discount to your purchase price. You look around to see what it is you can sell that's pretty much trading at a good price. And so you wound up with people in the subprime crisis in August selling blue chips.
Right.
And suddenly the blue chip market went down. So, you know, the problem is you really don't know exactly where, you know, the fallout is going to be. What we've got right now is a couple of nasty things going on, which is that a lot of the people who hold the AAA rated paper made out of subprime mortgages and buyout loans, you know, the things called CDOs. How you explain this alphabet soup, I don't know. These are called collateralized debt obligations.
You just use the word derivative. Derivative.
Yeah, you bundle a lot of mortgages together and then you sell them off in different packages. The whole idea was that, you know, you would create some of these packages would be AAA rated, and you'd put all the risk in other packages.
Mm-hmm.
And where the ratings agencies got it wrong was in their assessment that the AAA packages really were AAA. But a lot of people who can only buy highly rated debt bought these. We're talking about insurance companies and pension funds. And if you get a downward rating on one of these things, these guys are by the rules of their portfolio, they're forced to sell this. So, you know, when you get a downgrade from S&P or Fitch or Moody's, and they, you know, they've been taking some of these things from AAA down like 14
right.
notches at once.
Unbelievable.
And then, you know, you got to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a choice.
Right.
You know, you're in violation of your covenants if you hold on to it. There's that, and then there are new accounting rules that are forcing more stuff to be marked to market, and the next level of those changes is set for the middle of November. So we'll see more stuff marked to market. But you know, the problem right now is you hit these, you know, it's sort of like the you remember the good old days of Amazon when analysts competed to see who could come out with the most outrageous
right.
price
right.
target.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you say 600, I say 800.
Right, exactly.
No, 1,000,
right.
1,000.
Right.
Well, we're doing the same thing here with the losses that the banks are going to do. It's like every time I turn around, the estimate of losses is going higher,
right.
and we're sort of in this competition. And it gets really scary. I mean, we're talking about people saying, oh, you know, we're going to see $100 billion in losses. No. $200 billion.
Yeah.
The estimate right now that I see from people who I think aren't completely scared out of their minds is about $230 billion in write downs before this is all done, spread across the whole industry.
And I got to tell you something. Two things. I don't think it's helping that some of these CEOs are stepping down right in the middle of this, obviously, or being asked to leave. Number one. And the second thing is, I got to tell you something. You know, I've been doing this a long time, at least 20 plus years in this business, and it is the same thing over and over and over again. The absolute greed of the guys with the money, with creating these very sophisticated yet incomprehensible instruments and just pawning them off and then eventually getting bailed out is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, you've got you know, the kind of profits these guys made when these things were worked, you know, when they were sold, If you look at what they made, you know, you're talking about huge increases in the bottom line at Goldman and J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup and all of that. So, you know, they got paid really, really well to do this stuff. The problem I have now is not even whether we're paying, you know, Charlie Prince or Stan O'Neill $160 million to leave. My problem is, what about all those other people who get caught in this? The thing that I've started to see happening at the rating agencies, since you brought this up, is they're starting to look at the municipal bond, the bond insurance companies, the AmBecs of the world, the MBIAs,
right?
And these guys have AAA ratings, and that's why they can insure bonds with as little capital as they have. These are not hugely funded companies. And the rating agencies have said, hey, we're going to take a look at that. And they've been pretty careful about saying that they're not, you know, they're going to take a look, but they're not talking about downgrading them yet. If they ever do, we're going to see a real huge problem.
Right.
But where's the problem going to be? It's not going to be, you know, coming out of the hide of the gold mines. It's going to be coming out of towns and cities and counties all across America.
Right.
These guys insure about half of the muni market.
Yeah, but what happens, you know, take it one step further. What does that really mean? It's you and me.
Of course.
I mean, that's what we're talking about.
It's a double whammy, which is that, you know, because housing prices are falling and the economy is slowing, you're seeing falling tax receipts, especially any place that's got a tax collection that's based on real estate, you're seeing collections go down.
Mm-hmm.
So to bridge those, you'd love to be able to go into the debt market, because, you know, you're not talking about forever. You're talking about a couple of years before things start to pick up, and you'd like to be able to borrow some things and not have to shut down every school and library you run. But you're talking then about going into the debt market at a time when the debt market is in complete chaos, and it will get even worse if these insurers go out of business, because it's, you know, they only insure about half of the market. Cities that have AAA ratings and agencies that have AAA ratings on their own don't need the insurance company, so they'll be fine.
Right.
It's going to be just like now when the companies that are getting killed. You know, GE doesn't have any problem raising capital in this market.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But anybody else who's sort of, you know, a little marginal is going to get really smacked.
Yeah,
and then,
you.
Yes, it will come out of your hide and my hide.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking
forward to
it.
The only way to make up for it is to raise tax rates.
Right. Very nice. I'm looking forward to it. Very much looking forward to it. Listen, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to go over cell disciplines and find out exactly how we can figure out how to, and I want to understand your cell disciplines in this market. So stay tuned. We're on the Disciplined Investor Podcast with Jim Jubak.
Don't go jumping around the directory. We've got more coming up. We'll be right back.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
Now, welcome back to the show.
Okay, again, we're back. We're going to talk some cell discipline. So, Jim, tell me about what it takes. What is it that when we look at a stock that you like and all of a sudden that day comes, you say, it's off the list, it's being pulled, I'm selling it. Take me through some of your theory.
Well, it depends on the market. You know, I try to find stocks that have as much, as many trends going for them as possible. So I tend to look at, you know, I try to find good stocks in good sectors, in good macroeconomic settings, et cetera. So one of the things you're looking for is when that starts to decay. And one of the things that's very confusing about the market as we're sitting here in early November is that it looks like there are a lot of trends out there which may be peaking. So, you know, if you own oil stocks, if you own gold stocks, you know, you're starting to say, well, okay, so how much more up can I do? And so from there, I start looking at, I actually use charts. And so one of the things I look for in a chart is I look to see, you know, I love to see a nice steady upward trend, when I'm buying and holding something. But what I'm really looking for in terms of selling is I look for that moment when the trend goes parabolic.
Mm-hmm.
When a trend that was like at 45 degrees or 30 degrees, starts to go up at a 70 degree angle, because that's not sustainable.
Right.
And it's especially not sustainable if you're looking at, you know, what that is a read that the enthusiasm in the market is really getting ahead of itself. You're especially worried if that's happening just before earnings are announced, because you know that even if the analyst is saying, well, you know, my projection is 40 cents, you know that because it's gone parabolic, the market is really probably counting on 50 cents as well as increased guidance. And when you've got a nervous, like, you've got a nervous market like this one right now, what we've seen is companies that have come out and missed by a couple of cents and then not raised guidance have gotten whacked. One stock that I was looking, I was looking for it to get whacked, before I bought it, a little stock called Itron. They make, meters for utilities. They make intelligent meters so that you can do a lot, the utility can do a lot more about controlling,
costs,
right, and power usage and all that. So huge momentum stock, and what we just saw was, they came out and they said, that basically their customers who are major utilities are taking a little longer to adopt than they expected, so revenue is going to be stretched out a little further. Gee, that's, end of the world statement there. So the stock went from 110 to 80.
Wow.
In 2 days.
Wow.
And you looked at this and you said, well, okay, this was, it didn't go quite parabolic, but it was starting to show that kind of acceleration that makes you nervous going into earnings. And the nice thing looking at the chart is that, I use Bollinger Bands, to tell me when, top and bottom. And this is a stock that was just tracking the top of the band. You're basically creating a price channel using, some standard deviation from the moving average, and you get a band, and it says, okay, as long as we stay in this, there's no big thing going on.
Right.
But it was tracking the top line, which was an indicator that this is
hot.
Not.
Right.
Yeah, it's not cheap. But when it bounced, the channel was getting wider, so it bounced. It fell $30, but it just bounced off the bottom of the channel. It's still in the channel.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing fundamental broke down here in terms of its price action. It's just that it's $3 cheaper than it was four days ago.
Right. So now you, one of the things I use also, and just to kind of mention, obviously you work with Microsoft, and one of the things that I have the choice of using any particular tool that I want, and I use many, many different charting and technical analysis tools. And the one that I love, I mean, I just love the charting features on MSN Money, moneycentral.com. And, whether it's things like Bollinger Bands or things like using MACD or whatever it is that you're particularly using for this circumstance, I think that the tools, do you have like certain charts that you set up a certain way that you're just looking at?
I set up my chart with Bollinger Bands. And then I use a MACD and on the bottom of the chart. Yeah, those are the two things I have them set up for as sort of default.
Right.
The other tool that I use a lot in a market like this one is we've got a tool called Stock Scatter, which goes through and rates stocks, from 1 to 10. But what I really like to do is it breaks down the market into sectors. And what I like to do is to try to use that to compare sectors. So right now, if I pull up top-rated stocks in the capital goods, I see that there are probably two dozen stocks that get tens, and that's a pretty good number. But if I then go to, let's say consumer durables, I see I've only got one.
Mm.
And that gives me a sense of how these sectors are being viewed by the market.
Kind of like the heat of the market, right? Kind of like where you're seeing things
exactly.
Trend.
Yeah. Again, because I'm trying to find as many trends as I can, and what I'm looking for is, change in that. So that I've watched as consumer durables have moved down in terms of heat, if you will, as this market has changed. And that's one of the things that you want to look at as well. You can own a great stock, but if the market is against you, it's going to be really hard to make much money on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you keep as many trends going for you as you can, it also absorbs a lot of stocks, a lot of mistakes in picking individual stocks.
Sure.
If you're in a sector that's going up, you can make a mistake and still make some money as opposed to trying to pick the perfect stock in a sector that's going down.
Yeah.
Not to do that.
Do you use sell stops or do you use any kind of limit orders when you do?
Nope. Well, I mean, I've tried those during the 10 years that I've run this online portfolio, Jubex Picks, and because I've got such a big delay, I write and it's only 3 days. I mean, it's 3 days basically from writing to to posting. But then I can't really respond to any event for another 3 days. So putting in any kind of limit order, whenever I've used it in the past, especially in volatile markets, which is where you might want to use it, I get whipsawed.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work with those kinds of delays.
Right.
And, you know, when you're running a portfolio, you know, the issue really is, you know, you're only, you know, only trying to set these for like 20 or 30 stocks. You can sort of keep them in your head. But also you want some sense of, you know, do I really want to sell this stock basically, you know, that's gone through my, you know, my imaginary or mental stop loss because something has changed or is it simply the market? You know, I do tend to hold things a little too long, I would say. That's my history.
Yep.
But on the other hand, you know, I try to be a little patient. So, you know, we're looking at a stock called SIRF Technology Holdings, which was down as much as 30%. And fine, you know, and basically what we're doing, what I was doing every quarter was writing the same blurb on the stock, which is, okay, when the orders from Motorola finally come in,
Yeah.
And they finally came in this quarter. And the stock, you know, is now, we're back to exactly where we bought it. So we made 30% in about a week.
Hmm.
So it was worth holding that because there was nothing fundamentally going on. I mean, one of the things you have to do, I think, is look at price action and sort of figure out, you know, how much volatility you can stand and under what circumstances. And for
right.
me, if the fundamental story is still convincing, I can live with a fair amount of volatility. It's not everyone's.
Now, we talked about technical analysis and fundamental analysis on terms of underlying issues. Do you use any quantitative analysis? Use a stock screener on the Money Central site?
Not much. You know, the problem is it's very hard to get, you know, fine enough detail. I mean, the problem you have, especially in a market that's changing very rapidly, is that most stock picking strategies, whether they're screener based or technical analysis based, they're all backward looking. And in a market like this, you sort of have to go, well, okay, do any of these trends really mean anything going forward? So I can tell you what, you know, what if current market conditions would continue for another year, I can tell you what would be good stocks to own. But that sort of fudges the basic question, which is, are we going to be in the same market a year from now as
right.
we are now?
Right.
And I think that is the big question, for investors looking at what they want to do right now, that, you know, after the turn of the year, there's a sort of secret technology rally going on now underneath all this stuff, which is exactly what you'd expect in the fourth quarter.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's buried under the oil stuff and the volatility and the financials and all that. And then the question is, you know, in January, what's the year going to look like? The Fed really spooked the market today, because you had a couple of Fed, governors coming out and saying, hey, we're looking at the economy slowing down more than we thought in 2008. And if that's happening, then certainly nothing that really worked in 2007 is going to work real well in 2008.
Well, the Fed is a lot of, I don't want to say doublespeak, but they're contradictory, you know, in terms of their inflation watch. And then we're talking about economy slowing. I mean, what are we supposed to believe?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is I think they're trying to put enough, you know, what they're looking at, you know, this is exact, you know, I wrote an article that basically said, you know, Bernanke caved into Wall Street expectations. And I think what you've got right now is some Fed governors who agree with that and are saying what we really need to do is to do something to make Wall Street less complacent, because right now we've got the Fed funds futures market, which, you know, is prices in rate, future rates of change in interest rates. It's pretty much decided with 100% probability that we're going to get another cut either in December or January.
Oh, boy. We'll see. I mean, that's going to be kind of interesting, but I still think that there's a lot of other fundamental problems in this market that has to be addressed before just throwing more money at them.
Well, no, but I guess what I'm saying is that I guess these Fed guys are out there trying to say, you know, trying to get the market so they're not going to expect that, because the market is, you know, if you go into the market and the market is really, really vulnerable, and the market is expecting a Fed, you know, cut, it's very hard for the Fed to do anything else.
Mm. I hear you. Let me ask you this. Now, what, in terms of an investor, you know, you get probably a lot of emails. I get a ton of emails. People ask me a lot of questions, and you got to be careful what you know, the information you give back. But What do you think is one of the biggest mistakes individuals make when it comes to selling or not selling? I mean, depending on how you look at it.
I think the biggest mistake people make when it comes to selling is not selling.
Right. Well, okay.
I do the quarterly money shows, and I've been doing that for a number of years. And what I remember is that up until 2005, I was still getting questions from folks that were, what do you think of Lucent? is it coming back?
How about Enron? Enron. Yeah. Just say, hold on to my Enron shares. What shares? You know?
Yeah. And it was like, all they were doing really was sitting there and saying, I'm not going to sell it until it gets back to the price where I bought it. I can't stand the thought of a loss.
Right. Yeah.
And, everything I read in behavioral finance, that relatively new field, says that people are really, really loss averse, and it tends to run their behavior.
Well, William O'Neill.
So people don't sell as long as they're looking at a loss.
But the problem is that people don't stick to disciplines. I'm this big, of course, the name of the podcast, my book and all that. I mean, we're talking about disciplines, mm-hmm. and people don't stick to disciplines is really what the point is. I mean, nobody is really, William O'Neill from Investors Business Daily, take us, 7% loss. If it goes past 7%, just get rid of it, be done with it, move on. Right. But the average guy, I agree with you, an average girl out there, they're saying, this stock owes me. This stock.
Well, it's also, I think also a lot of it is people don't know why they own something.
Mm-hmm.
That it makes it very hard to, if you bought it basically because someone told you it was going to be a great stock, it's well, what has to go wrong before you sell it? Well, since you bought it for no good reason,
yeah,
you've got no grounds for selling it either. It's one of the reasons why, I think fundamental analysis is a good discipline if what you do is basically, people say, well, I don't want to hear a story about a stock. I want to see the fundamentals. And what I want to say to them is, no, what you really want to do is construct a fundamental story from a stock.
Right.
What is the reason you think that this stock is going to be worth X dollars in the future? Tell me, you're looking at margin expansion, you're looking at new products, whatever. How do I get from point A to point B? Because if you don't have that story, then you don't know when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that, so if you know your stock well enough to know why you're holding it, then you've got some shot at saying, oh, that's not going to happen. I don't want to hold this anymore. There's no point in holding, if the story has turned out to be full of holes, why are you holding the damn thing?
Yeah, I hear you. I just find that there's so many, there's so much out there talking about what to buy, but never about what to sell. I mean, I can't even put my finger on anyone that I've ever seen, aside from maybe something like William O'Neill and a few, that really talks about the wholesale discipline.
Yeah.
I mean,
it goes back to the origins of all of our business in Wall Street. I mean, you don't make money really, recommending that people sell things unless they buy things on the other end. I mean, mm-hmm. you churn them. But the money has always been in selling things to people, and has been in terms of analysts, the pressure from the investment banking end. There's a lot of reasons why this is true. But I also think there's just the ingrained human unwillingness to admit to a mistake.
Yeah.
It's the same reason that, my dad would never ask directions. Because if he asked directions, that means that he didn't know where he was going, and he didn't want to, admit that.
He and I would be good friends.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me close on this in this question for you. So I see that in your portfolio recently you recommended or you moved out of Nokia, for example. And how long did you hold that for?
Oh, which stock are we talking about again?
Nokia?
No, I just bought Nokia.
You bought it? I thought you sold it.
Nope.
I must be backwards on that. I apologize. I thought you just bought DuPont and Marriott and Pentair and...
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So let me ask you then a different question about Nokia, because I am kind of curious about this. This summer I looked at Nokia as one of the last remaining players that could really compete with maybe the Apples and the the BlackBerry from Research in Motion. I had written off Motorola back in 1942, I think it was, or something like that. Myself and Motorola never agreed on with each other for a lot of different reasons. But so tell me about, just take me real quickly, in 1 minute or less, and we'll end on this point. You buy Nokia for the reason you bought it for. What's going to be the determining factor potentially when you're going to sell it?
I'm looking at margins. That the thing with Nokia is that the story basically is Nokia has been growing market share in the global wireless phone market. And the thing that makes that important is that they've been growing market share at the same time as they've been able to increase margin. That anybody can go out there right now in the cell phone business and increase market share by cutting prices. They've been able actually to increase their margins while gaining share and while cutting prices. And what this does is it sets them up for a potential annuity, because the real challenge is how do you sell phones and make a profit when you're selling phones in India and China? But that's where the future profit is. These are the fastest growing markets, as well as the places where people are going to step up to new services as they make more money. So what you're looking at with Nokia is a company that seems to have cracked this problem. They can actually sell in India and China and make money now. And every phone they sell now, if you own a Nokia phone right now in India, the likelihood is it basically gives Nokia a shot, a better shot than any competitor at selling an upgrade phone mm-hmm. to that customer. Mm. So what you've really done is you're buying, I think, a kind of annuity in a market that's based on Nokia's ability to gain share as well as grow margins. It's not simply keeping margins flat, which would be an amazing achievement for a company like Motorola,
right?
But it's actually increasing margins and selling cheaper phones. And that means it's got a kind of manufacturing edge, the kind that Intel rode for so long. If you can manufacture better and cheaper and turn your models over faster than anybody else, that will ride you for a long time. So right. What I'm looking at is if they keep their market share reasonably steady, but if that margin stays intact or goes up, the long-term story stays intact.
Right. Well, that's great. Very good. Well, thank you so much. Any parting words on your best advice for an investor out there should be doing these days?
Well, I think that, you know, you've got to separate your short-term and long-term stories right now. I mean, and it's very, very difficult. That, you know, I'm bullish on oil over the long term, but do I think that we go straight from 100 to 120? No, I think we're looking at some point you get a pullback. So the question is, you know, if you're expecting that, and you've put that into your strategy, then you know, yeah, I'm going to ride that out, or it matters to me and I'll try to sell before that happens. But, you know, if you figure out what the short-term volatility is in terms of long-term stories that you like, you've got to actually get a chance to ride through it. That's what's really important. Right. You never want to sell at the bottom.
Right. I hear you. Well, thanks so much, Jim Jubak, Microsoft's MS Money. I appreciate it. Thanks, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Hey, that was great talking with Jim. I tell you, that is just a great guy to follow and read his stuff. We'll have a link to his website so you can find out what he's talking about at any given time. And when we get back, we'll have an interview with Sean Aiken from OneWeekJob.com. I think you'll enjoy that. Stick around on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Hi, this is Rick Bookstaver, the author of A Demon of Our Own Design, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
So, you know, this week we had the great experience of having Sean Aiken, and he is doing this great project called One Week Job. And what he's doing is 52 weeks and 52 jobs, and we had the opportunity to have him work with us this week doing some trading and research and markets. So I thought we'd get some words. So, Sean, tell us a little more about this project of yours.
Yeah, well, I started in about February 2007. I graduated with a business administration degree. I realized that I had no idea what I wanted to do for a career. And so instead of taking the first job that came along and maybe taking 6 months to a year to figure out whether that was right for me or not, I thought, hey, why don't I go out there and do a whole bunch of different jobs and first learn about, you know, what I need in a career to be happy first. And so I created the website, oneweekjob.com. And the idea is that any individual or company anywhere in the world basically can offer me a job for 1 week. And so this is week 33, and I'm a stock trader.
Okay, so tell me, you know, what's really cool is I think a lot of people have questioned, you know, how is it that you make it through the week? I know that when I've been with you in different circumstances, the question always comes up, you know, how do you do what you do? I mean, you have to be in so many different places, and where do you sleep? Where do you, you know, what do you eat? What do you do? I mean, what's the whole process?
It's each week is completely different. You know, it can be a little exhausting because I'm continually, you know, trying to set up my next job and where am I going? How am I getting there? Where am I going to stay? But it's been an awesome experience in that just doing something new each week and completely, you know, just learning so much at the same time. So how it works basically is that, sometimes my employers will offer me a place to stay, or people will email me through the website, seeing that I'm coming to their city, and say, hey, you know, you're welcome to stay at our place. There's also another website, couchsurfing.com, in which it's kind of...
Couchsurfing. Is that couchsurfing?
Couchsurfing, yeah.
Okay.
It's basically built by travelers for travelers. And if the idea is that, you know, if somebody has an extra couch or some floor space and they're willing to have you in their home, you can go to the website and search up, you know, people who live in the city, and they'll welcome
and
you
stay
into
there.
Home.
Well, that's neat. Stay there. So, you know, I guess it's pretty challenging because, you know, obviously you have a lot of planning to do each week, and you do a lot of blog posting. I've been following you on oneweekjob.com, and anybody out there that wants to take a look at it, it's pretty cool because Sean has not only been kind of, you know, writing about his experiences, but he's also been doing some videoing, and you'll probably find our segment coming up soon. But, you know, what's the biggest challenge of this whole thing?
I think the biggest challenge is dealing with all the uncertainty associated with the project. You know, each week I have no idea, you know, pretty much where I'm going or how I'm getting there type thing. And you generally know about a week in advance of where I'm going to be. And so that, and just doing something completely different each week. You know, so last week I was an exterminator. Now this week to be in a stock trader, and next week I'll be a baker in Brooklyn.
Wow.
And so just continually, you know, by the time the end of the week comes around, Thursday, Friday, I'm starting to get more comfortable in the position and how I can contribute and my coworkers. And then, you know, Monday morning comes and it's time to start a completely new job, completely location. Right. And
well, I guess it's got to be kind of, in one way, really exhilarating that something fresh and new, and that's always great. But at the same time, there's a lot of, you know, beginning friendships and ending friendships along the way, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, that's the greatest thing about it is that, you know, I'm continually meeting some really great people that I'll be able to stay in contact with as I continue with the project.
So what's your ultimate goal of this whole, you know, in the end, what is your ultimate goal?
My ultimate goal would be to find, I guess, something, to get a really greater understanding of what I need in a career to be happy. You know, obviously in 1 week, that's not realistic to say, yes, that's the perfect position for me. The idea is about, you know, learning something new each week about the characteristics that I'm looking for in a career. So at the end of 52 weeks, I can look back on all that I've learned and bring all those things together and have a really clear understanding of the type of position that I need to be in.
Right, that's great. And I know that, and for the folks out there listening, you know, what's great about it, what really attracted me was that not only is Sean doing this for his own personal mission and exploration, but he's also helping out a charity. You want to tell us about how people, tell us about the charity and how people can help out with that.
Yeah, so the charity is the One Campaign. They're dedicated to ending global poverty. And so how it works is that any wages that the company is willing to pay me for the week, they make a direct donation to the campaign. And so after 33 weeks, I've raised just about $15,000 so far.
Wow, that's great. The charity must be really thrilled about this.
Yeah, I haven't had too much contact with them, but yeah, they're very
that's
pleased.
Great. Well, if anybody wants to donate, and I think that's a great thing, a show of support for this incredible journey that this young man is participating in, they can go right to his site at oneweekjob.com, and there's a donate here button. I'll have it on our podcast notes and the show notes as well. But I think that's great, and I'm glad that. Tell me, you know, wrap it up and tell us this. Tell us about your experience this week with working with me.
This week has been
Don't hold back.
This week has been really exciting. Just constantly doing something new all the time. You know, when I was in college, I always followed the stock market, and I thought that it might be something that I'd like to get involved in. And you know, it's been great. You know, kind of learning how to trade stocks, and then, you know, with you, with giving me the opportunity to actually be fully responsible from one of the stocks and say, hey, Sean, here's 500 shares. All the decisions are up to you. You know, so kind of whether I buy, sell, or hold, you know, it's completely up to me. A little intense, but it turned out, we turned out on the plus side, I think $300, which we donated to the One Campaign. And so it's pretty
good. That's great. All right, great. Hey, thanks for sharing this information with you. And folks, if you want to check out what Sean's doing for the next number of weeks, go to oneweekjob.com, and we'll again have this in the show notes. And give me a support. I think that it's a great thing and a real inspiration for all of us. Thanks for being here, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for
being
here, Sean.
That was a great show today, and thanks for being here with me. If you have any questions, again, write askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Take a look at thedisciplinedinvestor.com for all information you need on investing, hopefully to make you some money. If you want to pick up the book or the audiobook, remember that code TDICAST, C-A-S-T. Only for podcast listeners, we give that 10% discount on either the audiobook or the bundle. So stop on over there and find out what we're having to say, and we'll be back next week with some more information, hoping to make you money. Thanks a lot for joining us on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. See you real soon.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.